It's a new day. Yes, it is.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. We go now to the Ohio Business Machines Hotline. OBM, Ohio Business Machines, preferred copier provider of the Cleveland Browns. You know that every day is game day in your office. Call 216-485-2000 or visit ohiobusinessmachines.com. Today, we go now and bring in Albert Breer, who joins us. Albert, welcome to the show.
What's up, guys?
Not too much, obviously. A busy day here in Berea as the Browns have acquired Jamie Collins, the Pro Bowl linebacker from the New England Patriots, in exchange for a conditional pick, which could go as high as a third, compensatory, or a fourth. What was your initial reaction when you saw this trade?
Well, honestly, I've been around the Patriots for 12 years. They were the first beat I covered, and so I think it's almost like I'm scarred from the experience to the point where I don't think anything is like a shocker anymore. Look, the Patriots had four guys going into this calendar year that were going into contract years on the defensive side, and those four were Jamie Collins, Dante Hightower, Chandler Jones, and Malcolm Butler, and two of those guys are now gone. So, you know, I think this is, for the Patriots at least, purely a matter of, okay, who are we going to have here long-term? Who do we want as part of our program? And who are we going to watch walk out the door? And I just feel like the value that they felt like they had in Hightower, Butler, as far as how those guys fit into what they want to do and what they want to be, it was just better for them. That just worked better for them. As for Collins, I just, you know, look, he wants top dollar. There's no question about it. And different guys react differently in contract situations. And he's been awfully inconsistent through the early parts of this year. And I think that's part of the reason why, in essence, they chose Hightower over Collins with only one franchise tag to lock to lock both of those guys up going into 2017.
And Albert, why do we see, and it can be coincidence, but why do we see the Cleveland Browns and the New England Patriots on multiple occasions doing business together? And is it because, you know, the Patriots have been the template for success, you know, via the draft and free agency, and also maybe, you know, Sashi Brown, Andrew Berry in their very, you know, early stages wanting to walk that same walk?
Yeah, you know, Matt, I think that might have something to do with it. I think that the base of it, though, is a little simpler, and that, you know, Michael Lombardi worked there, and so he's got intimate knowledge of a lot of – now, it doesn't come into play in this case, of course, because it's only a draft pick going in the other direction, but what we've seen in the past, I think, is, you know, just a matter of the Patriots having a good background of the players that have gone through that program because of the relationships they've had with people who've had decision-making power there. And one of the things that you notice with Bill, if you really analyze the moves that he's made over the years, and when he brings in veterans from other programs, a lot of times he's dealing with people he knows and people he feels like he can trust. And so, you know, I think it's just, I mean, as much as anything else, the reason the two teams have done as much business together as they have is just a matter of the value that Bill puts on getting reliable information on people he's going to bring into his program. And he's obviously felt the last few years that, and this goes, I mean, Deion Lewis, Jabal Sheard, Barkevious Mingo.
Sure.
He just feels like the information that he can get out of Cleveland is probably better than it is a lot of other places.
Albert, when you look at this Browns team, what can Jamie Collins bring for those people who aren't as familiar with what he brings to the table? What can he bring to this defense?
I'll give you guys a cool anecdote, right? Like, so at the beginning of the year, one of the things that we do, and, you know, you do these quirky player polls. And so, you know, when I, like, every camp I went to, I had to just, you know, get five or six guys to answer a list of questions. And so one of the questions that we had to ask at every camp was, who do you think the best athlete on the planet is? And I, you know, as you might expect, there were a lot of people answering Usain Bolt or LeBron James. When I went to Patriots camp, I asked five guys, and I think two of them said LeBron James. One of them said Usain Bolt, and then two of them said Jamie Collins.
Wow.
So, I mean, that tells you the kind of athlete that those guys think he is. Like, he is freakish. And when I say freakish, I mean freakish for the NFL, you know. In an environment where there are a lot of guys like that out there, he really sticks out. And, you know, I'm not sure at 4 years into his career he's as good a player as he is an athlete, but you're going to be able to do some really, really cool stuff. And I think the best way to kind of look at it from a Cleveland perspective, because you got Ray Horst there, who's come from the, you know, the Pittsburgh lineage. You know, look at the what the Steelers wanted to do when they drafted Lawrence Timmons out of Florida State, or what they wanted to do when they drafted Ryan Shazier out of Ohio State. That's the type. I mean, you maybe get, you're getting a guy who's probably a better athlete than those two. Maybe not quite the player yet. He needs to be developed into that. But the ceiling for Jamie Collins, I mean, when we're talking about Collins versus Hightower, the reason why so many people here in New England are in disbelief over this happening is because everybody recognizes the ceiling for Collins is much higher than it is for Hightower.
Sure. And the money that, that you feel Jamie Collins is going to garner, I think I saw somewhere on Bleacher Report that he was asking, him and his agent were asking for Von Miller-ish type of money. Now the Indians, I'm sorry, not the Indians, the Windians, but the Cleveland Browns have the money to spend via free agency. And I know the Patriots are a little bit more judicious, but what, I mean, what type of money are we talking about in this type of situation?
Well, I think the one thing that you always want to look at is the franchise tag, because that's the leverage point, right? Like, so they can tag him, and it's going to cost about $15 million to do so. So what you do is you look at it, it's like, okay, what? So, you know, over the first 2 years of any deal, it's going to be, you know, the cost of two tags. So the first tag would be $15 million, and then the second tag would be 120% of that. So the second tag would be $18 million, if my math's right. So you'd be talking about a deal that would have $33 million in the first 2 years of it. I mean, I don't know if he'd get like what Olivier Vernon got on the open market. But, you know, I think you're clearly looking at a player who was not going to take a discount to stay in what's the best program in the NFL, and can look at it, you know, fit in a very fair way and say, I'm worth a deal, you know, in the neighborhood of $15 to $16 million a year. Now, the good thing for the Browns, like you said, they've got tons of space. They've got $50 million of cap space. So if they want to do it now, and the clock's ticking on that, obviously, but if they wanted to do it now, they could figure a way where they could dump a lot of money into the 2016 calendar year by just giving him a huge raise on his base salary and make the numbers more manageable going forward. But this is going to be an expensive player to sign.
Correct. And could this be an opportunity for a Browns organization? And I'm not saying by any shape and form that Joe Thomas and Joe Hayden are going to get traded, but as Joe Thomas and Joe Hayden are getting up there in years and really haven't brought a lot of success to the Cleveland Browns franchise, you make a move like this where you make this guy, along with maybe who you draft next year early in the draft, the next faces of the next 5 years of this franchise.
Yeah, and I think it sends a good message to your locker room, too. You know, we're not just selling off everybody. You know, here we're bringing in an elite athlete from a quality program, and, you know, he's going to be one of our leaders for some time to come. You know, and so I think it does send a positive message to the locker room. And, you know, for guys who, and you guys have watched them, I mean, I think of guys who've shown a lot of fight considering the circumstances, and a coaching staff that's done a very admirable job considering how young that team is and the task that they were given. You know, I think it's a reward for all those people. You know, here's a player that you're going to get right away that is going to be able to contribute. And, you know, I think it's very easy to see a scenario where he becomes a cornerstone for your franchise for a long, long time. And he came in at an affordable rate. You know, I mean, it's, look, you know, the Patriots have taken advantage for years and years and years of other teams being in certain circumstances. Martellus Bennett's a great example of it, right? Like the Bears knew they weren't going to bring back Martellus Bennett. He'd become a problem for him. So they got him on the cheap. You know, this is a good example of, I think, the Browns trying to do what the Patriots have done with other teams for so long, which is, okay, this team is in a unique circumstance with a player that is, you know, obviously to some degree worn out is welcome. And now, you know, we can swoop in and we can take advantage of that. I think there's certainly a scenario that could play out here where that's the final result. In fact, if you look at what happened in Arizona and the fact that they, you know, and look, I know the Cardinals aren't playing great right now, but the way Chandler Jones is playing out there, that's to me, you know, a template of how you hope it plays out in Cleveland, where, you know, the guy winds up playing better than he ever did because being traded lit a fire under his ass, and you look at him as a long-term piece that you can build around.
Certainly hope that is the case. Talking with Albert Breer from Monday Morning Quarterback. Albert, when you look at what this team is attempting to do, many people thought they were going to be selling off assets, and that means Joe Thomas,
right?
Joe Hayden. Have you heard anything on that front, and are there any other deals you're hearing about potentially around the league?
Yeah, I know he was unequivocal about not trading Joe Thomas. I mean, the wild card is, of course, you know, somebody who's desperate and in a win now position to you know, needs help on the offensive line, whether that's, Arizona with, Jerry Vardy or getting hurt, or Seattle with the situation they have. Somebody throws a ridiculous offer your way, then maybe that's what changes the whole outlook with Joe Thomas. But I think part of the reason why he was so unequivocal with Joe was because one of the things you notice in Cleveland in the spring and the summer and even now, the coaches have done an excellent job of keeping everybody locked in, even though the results haven't come yet. And I just noticed when I was there in the summer what great buy-in he was getting, and to me, I think the way that they view Joe Thomas, he's one of the pillars of that. So it's tough to take one of the pillars out, And so I think Joe Thomas, despite his age and the fact that he may not be around when you're ready to compete, really compete, in a position where you'd be like fighting for a division title or something like that, there's a value that you can't put a price tag on that he brings. I think Joe Hayden, they might be open to moving him. That's again going to be a matter of the compensation coming back, because he is a good young player despite his injury history. He was still only 27 years old. He's under contract through 2019. Certainly, I think they'd have to get some value back to entertain the idea of dealing him off.
Albert, we appreciate the time. Obviously, nice to have a little bit of a distraction from what happened on Sunday, but the Browns actually bringing in a bona fide stud here in Jamie Collins, yeah, and hopefully can lock him down.
Well, and hey, maybe you guys can bring my Buckeyes a passing game. How about that?
Me too. That's right. Listen, Ohio's doing pretty well right now, one game away from the World Series, but yes, it'd be nice to get maybe, for the state of Ohio, a national football championship, an NBA championship, a World Series championship.
The number one overall pick.
And Jamie Collins.
Right. Well, we got 3 weeks to get ready for the big one. So hopefully everything's in order by then.
Yes, indeed. Albert, thanks so much for the time.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, Albert Breer from Monday Morning Quarterback, our guest there. When we come back, we'll hear some sound from after the game. Plus, we'll take your phone calls, 216-578-0850 on CBD.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to CBD. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Dog Pound through the Cleveland Browns Foundation 50-50 raffle. Lucky fans in attendance can enter to win big at Browns home games and make a difference in the lives of Cleveland's youth. Raffle tickets can be purchased at First Energy Stadium through your smartphone, on the Browns mobile app, or at kiosk locations. Don't miss this chance to support your Cleveland Browns Foundation and shoes and clothes for kids. Go Browns. Back to the phone line we go. Still to come, Hugh Jackson's Monday press conference in about 13 minutes at the bottom of this hour. Let's go to Dino the Trucker now. Dino, welcome. Oh, I'm sorry. Ed in Akron, welcome to the show.
Hey, I hope I get a minute. We had some technical difficulties last week.
And sure, go ahead, man.
My point. Hey, Nathan, you brought up about Ray Horton's the defenses were better the years after he left from the previous team.
It has worked out that way, yes.
Right. I wasn't happy when they hired him. I didn't get it. If you look at the history of the Steelers, with the exception of Bruce Arians, they typically keep their coaches. And they let him go. And then Tennessee let him go.
Well, to be fair, no. He left the Steelers. He was the secondary coach of the Steelers from 2004 to 2010. Left them and went to the Arizona Cardinals. He went to the Arizona Cardinals and was successful there 2011, 2012, and was considered at that time, I don't know if you remember, to be one of the hottest coaching candidates in the league. He was a defensive coordinator there, and I believe they went to the Super Bowl. No, that was before they went to the Super Bowl. He was named the defense coordinator for the Cardinals, and then when head coach Ken Whitsuntown was fired in 2013, he was retained and was considered for promotion for head coach. That's when they hired Arians, and then Horton was able to leave and went to the Cleveland Browns. And at that point, though, was considered a hot coordinator, hot head coach candidate. Came to the Browns. They had the 1 year here, left, went to Tennessee for 2 years, which were not successful, and is back now with the Browns.
Yes.
So I want to see more from this defense. We all want to see more from this defense. Getting a guy like Jamie Collins should be another piece that helps there. But
is Carl Nassib going to lead the league in pass breakups, passes defense?
He's good at that, and he does the Dikembe Mutombo afterwards. Emmanuel Ogba, I thought, had another sack. Was not credited with it. It went to Schobert and Shelton.
And had another – and a couple great run stops. along the way. And I think just watching the football game, and then, you know, what's great about being at First Energy Stadium is, for me, I get to see the full perspective, and then I love the new video boards to be able to go back and see it again very quickly right thereafter as the teams go back to the huddle and be able to solidify, you know, is what I thought or who I thought made the play actually making the play?
Yep.
And how did he do it?
Yep.
And I thought Emmanuel Ogbah is coming into his own, and I think something, as we talked to Danny Shelton from rookie year to, you know, to now his sophomore year, on what he needed to work on, Emmanuel Ogbah in his rookie year, I believe, is playing lower and finally playing as physical as we thought he would play, being the specimen that he is.
Yeah, and I really think getting that first sack out of the way kind of freed his mind a little bit and opened him up there. Let's go back to the phone lines now. Phil in Brecksville. Phil, welcome.
Hey, Nathan, Matt. You know, I'm trying to rack my brains a little bit and understand why, you know, why the team plays. And I've heard for this whole season now, a lot of reasons why. One is the team is young. And, you know, so I went on the web and I looked at the youngest teams, and really there's a two-year difference between number one and number 32. The Browns are number two, the Rams are number one, the Packers are number three. So, you know, it's not about the youngness of this team.
Let me just say one thing real quick. When you look at that, that's just the average age across the team, right? So I would be willing to bet that no team is starting more first or second year players on the actual field than the Browns.
Nathan, I'll agree with that, but whose decision was that? I mean, you're phrasing that like it's somebody else under somebody else's control that we start more rookies and have more rookies on the team. Look, I don't know, okay? I'm not a coach. I didn't play like Matt. I don't watch it all, you know, like you're, Nathan. All I can tell you is that you know, it, to me, it almost looks like it's not about age anymore. There are young players that are good.
Absolutely, and the Browns have some of them.
But not enough, and it moves
Correct.
To me towards talent. And it also moves to me towards coaching. And I don't even know that, okay? I don't even know where to go other than to say, look, when I heard yesterday I'm totally on board with Hugh Jack. I love the coach, okay?
Okay.
When I heard him say that it wasn't about adjustments, and then I read where Joe Hayden and Taylor both said they made adjustments, I don't know what to think, okay? Because the coach is telling me there were no adjustments made, but his two starting corners told me there were. So,
thank you very much for the call, and you shed a great light on comments that were made out of a locker room by players and by a head football coach. And I'll do my very best to answer your question. When Coach Jackson says there are always tweaks and adjustments made by every single team. The Patriots, who might be up 24-3 and just running through somebody at halftime, still go in, and they don't just sit down and grab a cup of coffee and go, well, it went just like we thought it would. Let's just keep doing the same thing. You make tweaks in personnel. You make tweaks in a certain coverage or a depth a blitz is coming from, how you're blocking a certain front that they lined up in that you haven't saw. So you're always making tweaks and adjustments.
Sure.
What Hugh Jackson might be saying is, we didn't change what we were doing. You know, we didn't run different defenses in the second half that we didn't run in the first half. Hugh Jackson, I'd have to go back and watch, didn't call a bunch of plays. You know, oh, that was really successful in the first half. I'm not going to run that again in the second half. It's just what it boiled down to, and we talked about it. Plays that were made by the players in the first half were not made in the second half for the Cleveland Browns. Plays that were pass breakups in the first half by the Cleveland Browns when plays were made were made by Brandon Marshall and Anunua in the second half, and runs the holes that were there in the first half that were
three pass breakups,
correct?
Three plays.
Holes that were there in the first half as Danny Shelton and Ogbah and Nassib were doing a great job as a front got opened up in the second half. So that happens league wide, and I guess when you look at the players, it's when a team doesn't have a whole lot of success as the Jets didn't, they're reeling to find answers at halftime. And then it gives you that opportunity to self-scout what we're doing and going, okay, we've called these plays and they haven't been successful. Why? It's because the Browns have been doing this. Okay, well, what if we do this to occupy this safety and stress Jamar Taylor, or and then bring something in behind him? Or the chess match is ever evolving. And when you get a chance, like at halftime, to reevaluate what you've done for the first 30 minutes, you come out and play differently in the second half.
Yep. And I think for part of it for the Browns is that you've got, especially in the secondary, you know, now this week you had your three veterans playing corner, but your safeties were a second-year player. You had an undrafted free agent in Tracy Howard. You had another rookie in Derek Kindred on the back end of that defense. And I think the front is starting to get a little fatigued because they played pretty well in the first half. And there were some good things. You had four possessions for the Jets where they had a three and out or a four and out. Actually, five possessions in the first half. The only other possession was a touchdown. So you did some good stuff, but all in all, it was not enough. Let's go to Barron in Cleveland.
Okay, I have a couple of questions.
Go ahead.
First of all, I'd like to say is, go Tribe, go Cavaliers, go Browns. I think we're in a good position here with the Browns from what I'm seeing. Hugh Jackson, I like the comments about Hugh Jackson and all of that. We have a young team. And with that said, my first question is that I believe right now that Josh McCown, yeah, we know he can go in and he can play. But since we're not going to the playoff this year, we know that for a fact, and we're still in the development stage, and I'm expecting us to look good later this year, I think Josh McCown, when he's playing, he's eating up developmental time for a younger player. I like what I saw in Hogan. Let him play. Let the other players play that are younger right now. And then and a second thing is, so I want your opinion on that, and then opinion on I heard Tony Grossi, and I'm dead on board. I play football myself. Tony Grossi saying that 3-4 doesn't work because we don't have the stud linebackers. We're putting too much pressure on the linebackers. We need to take one of the middle linebackers out and put a lineman on the field and go to the 4-3. I share his same sentiments.
The truth of the matter is, and just to be honest with it, a lot of those big runs that came, it's not about 3-4 anymore. You play your sub package, you're in the nickel way more than you're in any front, and the Browns are playing more, statistically speaking, 4-3 defense than they're playing 3-4 anyway. So it's not even that's the issue. They're not executing.
No.
And that's what it comes down
to. When it comes to the second half, and I know we got to grab a break here, which we will right after this take, is we got to – guys aren't winning their one-on-one as consistently in the second half as they were in the first half. That's just flat out, because when you want to talk about us stopping the run in a nickel package, it's they have six blockers, we have six defenders, or maybe six and a half, where, you know, a Tracy Howard's maybe down in the box, you know, playing some type of zone, and he's half in his zone, half eyes on the box. So he's six and a half men. And if they get a hat on a hat, which means all six of their blockers get a hat on all six of our defenders, someone's got to get off a block and make the play. That's what it boils down to, winning your one-on-one battle.
Yep.
And Matt Forte, as he did on the touchdown, you know, just that little counter step, Jamie Meter was in his gap, but peeked inside, which created a little space in his gap. And then by the time he crossed face to get back in his gap, Matt Forte was in the end zone.
And that was it.
It's the little things like that that happen in our defense. And oh, by the way, they happen on every defense in the NFL. We just happen to get exposed because we're inexperienced, we're young. And I think, to be honest with you, as I talked about in the pregame show, is I don't technically know if our defense has an identity yet.
It doesn't right now, and that's the reason why the Browns are right now 32nd in defense in the National Football League. It must improve, and today's trade to get Jamie Collins was a big step to try to improve that. I saw a headline here that says, shocking trade. This is from ESPN Cleveland. Shocking trade shows Bill Belichick didn't see Jamie Collins as a top linebacker. It's actually not what it means at
all. Who tweeted that?
ESPN Cleveland. That's a pretty slanted headline.
Way to go, Fontana.
Yeah, Fontana. That's actually not what it says. It says he wanted more money than the Pats were willing to pay him. And as you heard Albert Breer talk about, they had a decision. I know they know Chandler Jones is good, and they traded him. It's about, for them, certain priorities. They decided to pay Dante Hightower. I think everybody knows Jamie Collins is a top linebacker in the National Football League. You can only pay so many guys, and they had four guys coming up this year on defense. They've decided to keep Malcolm Butler and Dante Hightower.
Let's take that break before we make somebody unhappy.
Yeah, we'll take that break. By the way, Hugh Jackson should be headed down to the podium for his Monday presser right after this.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Segura, Matt Wilhelm here in the Dog Bowl in Berea. Don't forget, Where I'm From Apparel makes high-quality, super soft clothing that celebrates the places you're from. This is an Ohio company, born and raised, headquartered in Columbus. 10 locations at malls throughout the state of Ohio, 5 here in Northeast Ohio, including with the Browns Team Shop, 7 days a week, open 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. They have a new collection of exclusive Browns designs, including a Cardiac Kid shirt, a Muni Lot shirt, a Here We Go Brownie shirt, and a Retro Helmet shirt. And you go check those out. We love those shirts. By the way, Browns head coach Hugh Jackson at the podium. Are we going to take that now, Fontana?
We're having a little bit of feed issues at the moment.
Feed. I am hungry. No, just kidding.
Yes, yes, indeed. So we'll get to that in a second. Again, if you're just joining us, the big news today, the Browns have traded a conditional pick that could be as high as a third-round compensatory pick or as low as the Browns' fourth-round pick in 2017 for Jamie Collins, who was a Pro Bowl linebacker, second-team All-Pro last year from the New England Patriots.
And Nathan, I know you've discussed this as what will happen with Jamie Collins as it pertains to the Cleveland Browns from this point. What is the best case scenario? I think is very easy, a long-term deal, and he becomes a face of your franchise defensively and continues to be the player that he was for the Patriots. But what's the potential worst case scenario that's associated with Jamie Collins, who you get him and are we renting him for 8 weeks? And
the worst case scenario is that he's here and then you franchise him for a year. So you rent him for a year and a half, he walks, and you get a compensatory pick back.
Got it.
So there really isn't much downside. Let's go to the podium now and hear from head coach Hugh Jackson.
Very excited about getting into the tape and seeing what we can do better. It's a resilient group. They work extremely hard. I think they understand our process. You know, we can't undo yesterday. We can just learn from it and grow from it. You know, there's always lessons and losses, and we've had several. So there's been a lot of lessons to learn, and hopefully we'll keep growing from it. And I don't detect anybody, falling off or discouraged. We're disappointed, to a man, to a coach, because we haven't been able to get it done, but we're not discouraged. And I think we're determined to stay after it and keep working at it, and we'll continue to do so. Obviously, we got some injuries still to deal with. Cody Kessler, obviously, he's cleared, and we'll see more of him this week. You know, he needs to practice now, and we'll see where all that goes. Corey Coleman is cleared to come out and practice. That's exciting to get him back. Totally looking forward to having Corey back out there. You know, he's been around, run around a little bit and shoulder pass and those things, but he's chomping at the bit to get back out there and play with his teammates, and I think that'll help us on offense. Bodie Calhoun, he didn't have a concussion. You know, he was taken out, as a precaution, and we'll see exactly where he is as we go through the week. And then Tank Carter, he is in the concussion protocol. So I wanted to make sure I didn't miss out on anybody that way. Obviously, we added what I think is a tremendous football player to our team today, and Jamie Collins. It's another sign of where I think we're headed. D and Jimmy and Sashi and AB and Paul, because I think we're always looking for ways to improve our team. And I think we truly did so here today. Had an opportunity to talk to Jamie on the phone. It was a great conversation. I think he's going to come here with an open mind and come here and play football. You know, he's kind of a quiet young man who I think the most important thing to him is playing. I think that's what's important to him. But looking forward to meeting him and spending time with him and getting him acclimated here as soon as we can, getting him to know his teammates and learning our system and what we do. So, again, we're working at this thing, every day, 24/7. That's all I think about, because obviously for our fans, for our players, for everybody involved with this organization, as I said when I first came here, we're gonna find a way to win. And that's what my expectation is, and I'm not backing off of that. Okay.
How do you think Collins fits in your defense? Exactly where?
I think he's a tremendous pass rusher. He can play linebacker. I think there's several things he can do. He has a real versatile skill set, because he's done both there at New England. So we'll definitely find ways to plug him in, you know, and have him be a contributing member to our defense.
Contract obviously is up after this season. How important is it to sign him, and is this an 8-game kind of tryout with him? Or?
No, I don't think we want to try him out. I think we love to keep him, obviously, you know, but, I mean, it's got to be mutual. And hopefully we can move in that direction. But I think it's him getting him here, having him getting to know us get to know him. And, again, we know what he is. We know what he brings to the table. And I don't think we would have done this if we don't think there is an opportunity, you know, to move forward with him. We'll see. You know, let's get him here. And I think it's where his comfort level is, I think, is what's most important, you know, and then we'll kind of work around that. That I think it's too early to talk about those things. You know, I think obviously Joshua's started last week, and we got to make sure that Cody's ready to go. I know he's out of the concussion protocol, but he's got practice football. So I'll worry about that as we kind of move through the week.
Been a common theme.
It's tough, you know. We obviously, I think, practicing angles and making sure that everybody's around the ball is probably the most common things you can do, because obviously we're not going to go tackle our own teammates here in practice, you know, out of fear of injury. But you know, hopefully at this time, I mean, we're not the only team missing tackles, please. I mean, their team missed tackles too. They're just not missing them when guys are going into the end zone. You know, I'm just being very honest. That's what it is. And, yeah, we got to get guys on the ground better, you know, and there has been a fundamental issue through our season. So I know we work at it. You know, we address it each and every week, but we just got to continue to get better at it. We got to find different ways of addressing it to get it better. You know what? This young man is, I think he gets it. What I mean by that, you know, there are decisions sometimes that are out of players' hands, you know, and I think what's most important to him, he's just excited to have the opportunity, and we're excited to have him here.
When you went back and watched the film, were you able to identify any things that really changed between the first half and second half to slow you down on either side?
Make plays. I mean, it wasn't their halftime adjustments, I can assure you that. And it wasn't our lack of halftime adjustments. It was more the plays are there to be made, and I think our players will be the first to tell you we left a lot out there offensively, and I think there's some things that we didn't do as well as we did in the first half defensively. So it wasn't any new scheme or things that we saw or we didn't adjust or any of that. I just think for whatever reason, in the second half, you know, when it's time, when it's go time, you know, as people say, it's money time, whatever you want to call it. We're not doing it as well as I think we can. And that's been kind of our Achilles heel this year. So I got to get it solved. And that's my job, or along with our staff, is to put our players in better position. I'm not going to run on the field and put a stake in the middle of the field or do something crazy like I told our players. I mean, we got to figure this out together and just go finish the game. When you get good, when we get good here, we won't be having this discussion. I promise you that.
How much do you think you can attribute that to the youth of your roster?
Could be. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to make it about that. They're pro NFL players now, but are they young? Yeah, you know. And some of the plays that are missed are by some of our young guys. But at the same time, they're out there playing, so we feel good about them, and that's who's out there playing. So they got to make those plays when they present themselves.
A couple of your defensive players did say it was halftime adjustments by the Jets. You're adamant that it wasn't. Why, because
they didn't do anything different. When I looked at the first half tape, and I watched that very closely, I think, you know, you guys caught those guys right after the game, and that's very easy to say because I don't think they saw the game neither. They just got done playing in it. And I think if you go back and see them, and obviously I didn't bring it up, I think they feel differently today after watching the tape. I don't think they did anything any different. The quarterback got hot. He's a streaky player. and he made plays. And on defense for them, there was plays that we had a chance to make we didn't make, you know. And I don't like Josh to shoulder the blame. To me, everything with this football team, offensively, defensively, and special teams starts with me. So this is a top-down thing, you know. I'm not trying to micromanage, but I don't want our players to take that all on, you know, because everybody plays a role in everything. You know, it takes 11 players to play. So we just got to play better everywhere. We're not there yet, and that's okay.
In the perfect world, would you want to keep taking a look at Cody since he was coming along so well?
I want to take a look at everybody. You know, I think everybody, you know, who's healthy needs to play. My number one goal, Mary Kay, is to win football games. This is not a popularity contest to me or this or that. I'm trying to win games because that's what my mission is, you know, what our players and our coaches. Win as many games as we can. I'm not trying to see this or that. It gives us an opportunity to. We've done that. But I think at the same time, the number one goal is to try to win, you know. Sometime this week, obviously. I'm not going to make it today. I'm not going to make it tomorrow. I don't even talk to you guys tomorrow, right? So, I mean, yeah, I do. No, I don't. Okay. I forgot the schedule there, Peter. Well, I don't think it matters today, though. I mean, I'm being very honest. I mean, why do I have to talk about that today when I'm going to talk to you guys at some other point in time during the week? I mean, I'm not going to tell you the day I'm making that decision. I don't know. I mean, we're going to go practice. And I'm going to let Cody practice, and Josh is going to practice, and then we'll figure it out from there.
The little rap on Jamie that I've been reading, Collins that I've been reading today, was that he was freelancing and not playing within the scheme that Bill Belichick wanted him to do. And
he can freelance for me then. Hey, the way he freelances is okay with me. No, I don't. What happened there is not what's important, you know, for us here. We see a player that's very talented and has a tremendous skill set that fits in with what we do. So he's a Cleveland Brown now.
They all had a really fast start in the first half, over 100 yards received, just three targets in the second half. What happened?
It wasn't just three targets. You guys just seen the ball go towards him three times. I think that's what you guys counted. The ball should have went over there quite a few times. It didn't. You know. So, again, that's my point. There's things that we got to continue to get better at. You know, it's not about him having a fast start. He caught the balls that were thrown to him, and he dropped some that was thrown to him. So he's got to continue to get better too, you know. So it's not just about Terrell. We have an offensive team. The ball don't just go to one guy. You know, we spread the ball around to a lot of different guys. And he was fortunate to make the plays he made early. He had some chance to make some later, and we didn't make them. It's that simple.
Was there an issue with the route and the first interception?
Or
was that just
a bad throw? No, it just didn't work out.
Know enough to play in this first game?
Oh, I hope so. Yeah. I mean, we'll day and night if we have to. Yes, sir.
Good.
Thank you.
Thanks.
That's Browns head coach Hugh Jacks. We'll take our final break, give you our reaction to what he said there. Some good news in Berea. Jamie Collins is on his way in. Cody Kessler's been cleared the concussion protocol, and Corey Coleman cleared to return to practice as well. So hopefully the reinforcements are coming, and you're going to need them because the Cowboys are coming to town this Sunday, and they look pretty, pretty, pretty good. More CBD after this.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Welcome back to Cleveland Browns Daily. Nathan Zagura, Matt Wilhelm to recap today's big news. Jamie Collins, acquired by the Browns, Pro Bowl linebacker last year. Pro Football Focus's fifth highest graded linebacker on the season thus far. Has been considered one of the best cover linebackers in the league. Can rush the passer as well. He's in their top five in terms of pass rush productivity amongst linebackers. So this is a very productive player who, by the way, has not missed a tackle yet in a run play all season, which is missed tackles have been plaguing this Cleveland Browns team quite a bit. So this is very, very good, I believe, you know, for the Browns. Also good news, Cody Kessler is back, and so is Corey Coleman, who really can help open up this offense that has turned into basically checkdowns to Duke Johnson in terms of the passing game. Gary Barnidge for about 10 yards here or there, although he's gotten down the seam a couple times, and then Terrell Pryor carrying it. Getting Corey Coleman should be huge. So I think a positive day in Berea. The reinforcements are coming, and we'll find out, as you, Jack, said later this week, if Kessler's ready to start, but I imagine that he will be.
Yeah, and I believe he will too. And the reason why is, and I told you, I love watching the replays. I love having the all 22 perspective of sitting in the seats and watching the Browns game. You know, your eyes, you know, it's hard to deviate your eyes from Terrell Pryor, knowing the target he is and matched up with Darrell Revis. But I liked watching things pan out. And I think as time goes on, Josh McCown was who we thought he was, or is who we think he is. Great guy, great leader, great to be a part of this organization, but there things were missed. There were yards left out on the football field. That was the sentiment from Josh himself after the football game. You heard Hugh say that plays have to be made. That includes the quarterback. Throws have to be made. Catches have to be, you know, be made by those guys. And when plays need to be made, it means the quarterback's got to deliver the football where it should go to a guy who should make the catch that would extend a drive to give us an opportunity to win the time of possession, eat up some clock, get down the scoring zone, flip the field, whatever, you know, whatever it is, there's plays to be made. And I think at that point, when you evaluate your quarterback, you can heartily say, I'm doing two things. I'm playing a quarterback who I believe in just as much as Josh McCown now and Cody Kessler. And it took him 4 or 5 weeks to get there, but he's there. And secondly, it's the development aspect of Cody Kessler. Josh McCown, you can't deny how old he is. And then when it comes to Cody Kessler, you can't deny how old he is. And furthermore, the investment we've made in Cody Kessler.
Of course, and he's a guy who, by the way, the stats bear out, should be playing for this team. I know that maybe you can't open up the playbook as much if you're Hugh Jackson digging your bag of tricks, but Cody Kessler has been very competent, very efficient, and great in the red zone. He has been a good young quarterback, and I think at this point you want to see what you've got in him. I think the big news, though, Collins is going to come in, and he is going to be a guy that can cover for you in nickel situations, help at the point of attack. He can rush the passer as well, and I think is a big upgrade right now in your base over Joe Schobert and in your nickel over DeMario Davis in that role. And I think it offers a lot of
flexibility.
It's a big – that's a massive upgrade.
It is a massive upgrade, and I'll just go back to, you know, what Albert Burr said, the great athlete that he is. Some of the greatest athletes in the world play that tight end position because they can be physical and they can run. Well, we just got that guy on defense to be able to cover the physical tight end and the guy that can run away from him. You can't run away from him anymore or out-physical this guy.
Yes, let's go. Welcome to the Browns, Jamie Collins. Again, if you missed the show, we had reaction from Jason LaCanfora from CBS Sports on the trade. Also, Albert Breer, both guys saying Pats couldn't come to a deal with him and that's why they sent him here to the Browns to get that comp pick a year earlier. Also, both said they wouldn't expect either Hayden or Thomas to be moved at the deadline. That'll do it for us. Stay tuned for the Golden Boys for Matt Fontana. We want to thank Albert Breer and Jason LaCanfora for being with us. For, of course, Matt Wilhelm, I'm Nathan Zagura saying thanks for listening to Cleveland Browns Daily.
On ESPN 850, WKNR Cleveland.
You've been listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, a production of the Cleveland Browns and ESPN 850 WKNR.